Welcome to the Become Who You Are podcast, a production of the John Paul II Renewal Center. I'm Jack Rickert, your host, and I'm back with Thomas Hampson. Tom's a good friend of ours. Tom and I were talking about this three-pronged attack on the innocent. These are children, right? First abortion, if they make it out of the womb. We've got gender ideologies that directly attack these poor kids, you know, render them sterile. We've got all these labels, the LGBTQIA+ labels that are used. Now, listen to this as a cover for grooming, desensitizing and the exploitation of children, normalizing pornography as a primary weapon. And this is what Tom and I find all the time. You know, we find when we go up in school boards or push back on some of these ideologies, you know, they call you a hater, a transphobe, and blah, blah, blah. And we try to show people that you know, forget about the labels we're slapping on people. What's underneath all that? What are they bringing into the schools? What are they bringing into the hearts of the innocent, of the most innocent among us, children? And it's always pornography. It's desensitizing. What they want to do is, and just watch for this, they use these labels, these gender ideologies, as a cover to go in and first put kids on puberty blockers, mutilate their bodies, but on a mass scale, they're bringing pornography, and it's always about pornography. You know, these people are sick. There's just sick minds, you know, and I'm not talking about the individual kids that are mixed up and stuff. I'm talking about the adults in the room. And I'm also talking about, you know, these college kids. You know, think about the college kids. Tom wrote a recent article. We'll discuss it today, called Safe Spaces, Dangerous Schools. And he writes, you know, one of the most commonly heard complaints of college students in the last several years is that the institution of higher education that they attend has failed to provide, in quotes, safe spaces for them. Students have complained that they feel unsafe because the professors or fellow students or administrators fail to acknowledge their chosen pronouns, or that their students of color make them feel unsafe in classes or in their dorms. They're in dorms with white students, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Look what we've done to these minds. And these kids, they don't think. They've never been taught to think. And so these ideologies that they're learning in elementary school and then in high school, by the time they get into college, they have no minds of their own anymore, no hearts of their own anymore. They've just been indoctrinated and they fall for this. You would think they would latch on to reason, you know, and then their free will to choose the good, but unbelievable. So of all of those college kids, though, and really, I feel bad for them. They are confused. There's no doubt about it. But at the end of the day, I like to say, you know, you guys are just prima donnas. You're prima donnas. You're 18, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-old kids, right? You're young adults. We were all out living on our own, my brothers and I, by the time we were that age. We had to think for ourselves. We had to have practical skills out in the world to make a living. And we didn't have time to be prima donnas and look for safe zones. I mean, you know, we were out there in the world already. But with all of that said, we bring it back. Where is the real unsafe zone? It's in these elementary schools now, and you know, all the way from kindergarten and all the way up into high school. You know, who's protecting these kids? Should be their parents. It should be the culture. It should be the administrators. It should be the teachers. But it's amazing how we're using and abusing these kids. So, hey, that's how Tom and I are going to get into. Buckle up and get ready for today's episode. I'm with my good friend Tom Hampson of the Truth Alliance Foundation. Tom also works with us at the John Paul II Renewal Center on a regular basis, and vice versa. We do a number of different types of presentations. One, Stolen Innocence, where we really speak to what's happening to these youngsters. Tom's got an incredible background. I've been a crime investigator his whole life. So, Tom, you've investigated sex trafficking with kids, child porn, and all kinds of things. You've seen all kinds of things up front. And the last article I was just looking at, maybe want to unpack that a little bit. Safe Spaces, Dangerous Schools, where, you know, you start out talking about, you know, college students looking for safe spaces, but you transition pretty fast to where are the safe spaces for our high school, middle school, elementary school kids that are getting really sexually abused. I mean, this is, Tom, you've seen a lot of stuff up front and personal, my friend, but right. But have you ever thought we'd see this on a mass scale? I mean, this is a mass sexualization of of children. It's amazing. Right. If we don't kill them in the womb, we're going to sexualize them, render them sterile, mutilate their bodies, use and abuse them. And we're trying to wake people up. It's not only not happening, but we have to address the fact that this is being pushed down from the Biden administration all the way down into your local elementary school and beyond, you know. So I don't know where you want to start with that, Tom, but it is something that we're seeing.
Well, the problem is that this is something that is new in the last 30 years or so, 30 or 40 years, that this is something that's really started exploding. And today it's gotten so bad that 10% of kids that graduate from high school have been victims of educator sexual misconduct sometime between kindergarten and 12th grade. 10%, that's a huge number by an adult in the school system.
We're not talking about, you know, shown porn in school or something. We're talking about some actual sexual abuse in one way or another by an adult. So,
yeah, right. It's not necessarily, it isn't necessarily a rape sexual rape or anything like that. But it's grooming. It's basically a inappropriate sexual conduct by an educator with a child. For example, inappropriate sexual jokes to groom, that are is a grooming technique. It might be something like, well, there was one example that I saw was this teacher was doing a class on Zoom with two other students, and the teacher accidentally played a porno video for these other two students. So on the Zoom, the porno video is running for a little while before the teacher realized that it was a porno video and he shut it off. Well, that case was investigated, and they say, well, it was just a mistake by the teacher. Well, that's not a mistake. That kind of thing was eliminated as one of the examples of a educator sexual misconduct because they said it was a mistake.
Now, what's behind it though? I mean, is that teacher that's doing this, is their intention to take it further, to actually physically sexualize these kids, or they're just getting off on dirty talk and stuff? I mean, where is this really heading? In other words, am I just a some kind of a pervert that gets off on, you know, telling kids dirty jokes and, you know, flashing my, you know, taking my pants off in front of, I mean, what is this? Well, or is it, or would they take it further if they could? In other words, am I sexualizing or grooming a number of kids and just seeing, you know, who actually I can take it further with, you know, do you know?
Well, you don't know until you look at the individual, but the fact is that if teachers are using children in any way for their own sexual gratification, that's wrong. That's not what they're there for. They're there to be educated. There are a lot of people who were just showing pornography to somebody else gives them a thrill. Our children are not to be used in that manner.
No. So I would say, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we know we're hurting kids, and we're twisting and distorting their idea of you know, what the beauty of marriage and our sexuality is all about. And this is being done on a mass scale. You know, you say it didn't happen or it wasn't around 30 or 40 years ago, but it was around. It's, you know, to a certain extent, I mean, it happens slowly over a long period of time, and then it accelerates. And this is what I think we're really seeing, Tom. I mean, look at the last 5 years. I can't believe how far, really since COVID, 4 years, how far we've been able to push this. It's, you know, COVID set off a number of opportunities, I think, for the deviants and the evil to come out into the world. And I think that's what's happening. We just unleashed this, and now there's no hold barred. I mean, everybody is just doing what they want to do to kids.
Well, COVID gave us a glimpse as to what's going on. I don't mean to suggest that there hasn't been sexual abuse of kids or sexual exploitation of kids until the last 30 or 40 years in schools. I'm certain it's been going on for a long time. but there's degrees of it. And what's happened in the last 30 to 40 years is just a collapse of morality. We used to have a common morality where, like when I was a kid, teachers couldn't do anything that even gave the appearance that they were being improper. Mm-hmm. A single teacher couldn't go on a trip. A single female teacher or male teacher couldn't go on a trip with someone of the opposite sex.
Yeah.
That would be prohibited because that appears to be an improper relationship.
Yeah. And now we've taken it to the extent where we're allowing kids of the opposite sex to actually go on field trips and bunk with, you know, people of the opposite sex. I'm telling them they're trans, I mean, well, this is how far we've gone.
They're going into the same locker rooms. Come on.
Yeah. It's amazing.
And
it's amazing.
So this is and we're saying that, well, they're a guy or a girl based on what's in their head, not what's on their body. And this has become.
See, I think this is what's
an
changed.
Accepted kind of philosophy.
Yeah. So this is what's kind of changed. And the other thing I think that's changed is that we've all lost our moral foundation to the point that even if we sense that something is wrong here, as an educator, you have in your article, predators in the education system know all this. They know how to play the system. Okay, that's what we're talking about here. But now, other teachers and administrators, the non-predators, they know this too. They also know that 10% or more children in schools will fall victim to educator sexual misconduct by the time they graduate from high school, to your point. So why are the non-abusive teachers and administrators doing nothing to prevent it? And that's right. That's another change that we've seen. You know, when we heard this years ago, as a teacher now, right, or as an educator, you would say something, just as a person. You'd say, you know, you'd stand up for these kids, but they're not doing it. This is what blows my mind. What's your thoughts on that?
I don't know what to think about it. Part of it is the teachers don't want to lose their jobs. Part of it is that the unions are behind this. They don't want the possibility of a teacher being dismissed based on the appearance of something. It has to be an actual proven incident. For example, that teacher in Chicago that showed this video to the two students, they were able to get the guy off. All he had to do was go to some kind of re-education training for a couple of times and slap on the hand, and that was it. Well, to me, if this had been 40 years ago, the guy would have been gone because there's no second chance. You don't get a second chance when you're dealing with kids. If you know, in law enforcement, you don't get to accidentally shoot somebody and have nothing happen. I mean, it's like, oh geez, my gun discharged and killed the guy. Says, well, hey, you know, that doesn't help.
No,
you're going to be charged for this.
No,
it's called negligent discharge. It's not accidental discharge. So that showing of that film was negligence. What's he doing? What's it doing on his school computer anyway? Why is there a porn video on his school computer?
Yeah, but we're seeing this. I mean, you and I, when we're speaking, right. I mean, they're bringing this porn right into the classrooms. But they're bringing it in books, videos, all kinds of things.
Yes.
When we think again that it's Planned Parenthood and CECUS, Sex Education for Social Change, and Planned Parenthood, whose main business is destroying humanity, they're putting sex education standards together, and we're bringing this in. So this is what's different. We're blatantly allowing this to happen. We're blatantly, to your point, not reprimanding teachers. We're blatantly afraid to stand up against any of this stuff. And so the LGBTQ agendas, all of these things, these ideologies are being pushed on our kids. And the same thing, to your point, just to stay out of the weeds. You know, this doesn't belong in the schools. None of this belongs in the schools. It's just right. Another way to sexualize. When we look at the materials, Tom, and I speak for both of us, when we're looking at this material, it's very obvious to us. And to me, the more I think about it, that we're using these LGBTQ almost as a cover for pornography, because every one of these books is pornography in one way or the other, right?
Yeah, well, it's intended to do that. It gives them excuse, because then they can say, well, this is we're educating children in the LGBT lifestyle, like just like this National Sex Ed Standards, where they're teaching 6th, 7th, and 8th graders how to engage in oral and anal sex. Now, there's no reason to be doing that. No. You don't need to have an education. You don't need to teach kids how to engage in any kind of sexual activity.
Do you think? No. I mean, right? I mean, do you think? And so to teach somebody about, you know, anal sex and all this stuff is right in the books. You know, perfectly
grade.
Normal.
In
yeah, they said, yeah,
crying out loud.
It's recommended to 10-year-old and up. You know, speak to that dean. Did you hear what happened to him now?
Right.
That Chicago Public School dean that was recently.
Well, that was the one. It's alleged that he's would abuse this girl for several years, and he also has been accused, and he's being investigated for getting the girl pregnant twice and forcing her to get abortions both times. Well, how does that happen? How can any teacher have a relationship that results in a pregnant child twice, a twice pregnant child, and twice getting an abortion? How does that happen that nobody notices that there's something wrong?
Yeah.
How is he doing this? He's not doing it in the school. He's got to be going off somewhere alone with this kid. Doesn't anybody notice?
Yeah, I mean, look, where are the parents at? Do we know any of those details? Right. Do we know where this is right now in the court systems?
Well, he's been charged. The criminal case is underway now. And the civil case was just recently filed.
Okay. So do we know how long ago that this happened?
Well, the criminal case was filed last year.
Okay. All right.
And so, the guy's been suspended from the Chicago Public Schools. But one of the things that becomes really, really significant in this, the protection of children, when you realize that 10% of kids are victims of educator sexual misconduct by the time they graduate, in the Chicago Public Schools, they have a unique way of investigating these cases. They have a unit that's dedicated to investigating child sexual abuse cases. And they also have tremendous investigative powers. They have the power to subpoena records from the teachers, from other people, phone records, financial records. They can subpoena anything they want to. They can subpoena witnesses. The Chicago Public Schools is the only school system that has that power. No other school system has it.
In the United States?
If a child is, now all schools everywhere have the same percentage of kids that are abused by teachers. It's hit or miss in the rest of the state as to how these cases are investigated.
Yeah, and we know that all these cases are not being reported or recorded, right? So there's got to be a lot more cases than even these, right?
Well,
so when
when
we say 10%, it could be higher than that.
Well, probably not. It's the studies are based not on criminal cases, but based on survey material and also a number of different ways.
Okay,
to
so
do
it's
it.
Probably around 10%.
Probably around 10%.
And that doesn't include abuse that these poor kids are suffering, say in a home or other places either, you know, and or suffering by their peers, you know.
But just think about this: the OIG last year reported that they concluded 446 investigations of allegations of educator sexual misconduct.
Yeah, and that's only in Chicago, right?
And that's only in Chicago. Well, that's only a drop in the bucket of the thousands of cases that happened last year in Chicago. So that's nothing compared to the numbers that are actually out there, kids being sexually exploited by teachers in the system. You could catch a lot more if you were looking for people, but the real solution to this problem is to prevent it from happening in the first place. And that prevention starts with limiting who can be teachers. Predators gravitate to places where kids are. These child predators, they go to places where kids are. And what's really needed is going back to the days when a person's character, their high morality, determined whether or not they were going to be employed as a teacher. What, for example, you can be an open Wiccan pansexual and be a teacher in the Chicago Public Schools, because it is a person's right to be that in the United States. Why would anybody want their child to be taught by somebody who has a worldview of a pansexual Wiccan?
Yeah.
I'm not sure Wiccans want their kids taught that way.
Yeah. Well, here's what I mean. We, you know, at the end of the day, right now, we're out talking about this a lot. I don't see that changing. You know, I mean, I don't know what has to happen. These schools are spiraling almost out of control. The proficiency standards, you know, the actual education of our kids is going down, and we're teaching them how to sexualize themselves. And I think this is just, on a larger level, it's just the scope of the whole culture today, all our society today. And I think, you know, we're starting to just see this. I think this is kind of getting toward the end, where you're just really seeing the wheels come off of our civilization. So, right. So I think there's no doubt you're right that we have to hire different teachers, you know, but I don't see that happening. In fact, I see the opposite happening. I know, and you know, of conservative teachers, the kind that we'd be looking for, actually are getting taken out of the school systems, not put into the school systems. The same thing are happening in seminaries and you know, in churches. You know, the guys and the men and women that actually would do a really good job are being pushed out in a lot of cases. You know, it's amazing.
Even well, see, I think we need to recommend people homeschool their kids, have their kids in private schools. And I think one of the things that in the old days when education first started in this country, the community got together and raised money to hire a teacher. And I think that's what's got to happen again. We've got to go back to saying, hey, we're going to have our private school. We're going to raise money among those of us who want our kids raised in a healthy environment to support a teacher that can do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's a possible thing.
Yeah. So here's what we're getting at. The bottom line, and I don't really see any other way to do this, is parents are going to have to step up. There is no knight in shining armor coming to rescue any of us right now.
No,
there's nobody riding in on a big stallion. Even if Trump gets back in, which I think would be a positive thing for our country, let's face it, we get some good senators and stuff. The politicians aren't going to solve this.
The schools. Nobody's going to save the schools. The schools are lost.
Yeah. And so the only people, and don't forget that it's because parents haven't stepped up to the plate, and I'm generalizing here, but people in general, that all this evil is allowed to permeate into our cultures. And in other words, if enough of us really cared, this wouldn't be happening. So what we're looking at, Tom, is let's just be clear, you know, we're looking at a culture that a lot of people that are living around us are okay with everything that you're talking about right now. They're okay with it. Like, what's the big deal? You know, I was in in-service, which is a time to go on. I was in an elementary school in-service with the teachers, which is a time, you know, you almost give them like a day of, we're studying some topics, right? And or multiple topics. So I go in, and my topic was to talk to these teachers about these types of things, right? The sexualization of kids, what we can do. This is your Catholic schools. And so one of the teachers said, Jack, how would you handle this? She goes, I was walking down the hall in school, an eighth grader was showing another eighth grade boy porn on his phone. And I said, hey, let's see what you're looking at, right? And he tried to hide it, but I had seen it already. And I said, come with me down to the office, you know? And he said, yeah, I'll come down to the office. And she goes, you know, you're pretty nonchalant about this. Does this not bother you? And he goes, what's going to bother me? He says, you're going to call my dad. My dad watches porn.
Yeah.
So he didn't care. And his dad was watching porn, and his dad's not going to care. So, you know, when the culture starts to unravel, right? So we have these new threats every day. And I'll just kind of throw this out at you. You know, what we're seeing, I think, the violence on the street,
the gang, even the gang violence, the abortion, the wars, euthanasia, mutilation of these poor kids that are, you know, confused about their sexuality, redefining marriage is meaningless. I mean, all of these things break down the moral fiber of a nation. And that's what I think we're seeing today.
Well, it is. The morality is what we need to get back to. And the churches aren't stepping up to reestablish that at all. It's not happening. They're preaching to their own choirs and not preaching to the culture, rather than standing up and saying, hey, you guys better get your act together. You know, you're destroying the culture. You're not doing anything to help it.
Yeah, well, you know, right before we came on, you had used the word in a talk at a church on piety. And what did they tell you? What did
they the church leaders say? It's too churchy.
Yeah, it's too churchy.
Too churchy. It's on purity. It was on purity. You can't. One of the prime values is purity. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, it's, what is that? The quote from Paul, whatever is pure, whatever is pure, whatever is noble, whatever is right.
Yeah.
What is true, noble, right, pure, lovely, or admirable. If anything's excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. So
now, where did they come from? Do you have
Philippians 4:8.
Okay. Isn't that something, right? So we've lost that. Jason Jones said on a recent show of mine, speaking about this stuff, he said, the moral imagination of our young people has been utterly obliterated by these things we're talking about and pornography, right. He said, their moral imagination has been destroyed by TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram reels, and are just becoming addicted. They're addicts now. Humans learn through watching other people. We learn what to value. We learn what's important. And he said, just scroll through any of those social media apps and imagine what they're learning about. And it's utterly catastrophic. Obliterating the idea of gender is devastating. So these poor kids are getting it in the school. The parents aren't standing up to the plate. They're getting on social media. They're a lost generation. The solution now for anybody that's listening that wants to bury their head, it's not that complicated. We have a seminar that we do for very, very busy people called Love Ed. And this is for very busy families, very busy parents. We come in and, you know, we actually present with you and your child in fifth grade and seventh grade and then beyond, you know, the beauty of love, the beauty of our sexuality, the biology, the theology behind it. And we also, part of it is bonding with your parents, because like we said, the hero in this story is going to be the parents. The hero are these young parents that are going to step up to the plate. So the hero is you. The hero, yeah. And you and I, Tom, are a little older, so we back up those heroes and give them the support that they need and give them the training that they need and be there on the front lines for them until they step up to the plate. But we're not going to be able to hold it too much longer if they don't start stepping up, brother.
Well, you know, that's my wife and I were watching that mini series on John Adams last night, and at one point, we were watching the one last night right before John Adams went to France to work with the French to get them to help us in the revolution. And he took his son, John Quincy Adams, with him. His son was 13. And his mother told him, he says, look, says, remember, God will judge you on everything you say and everything you do. You know, It is, and he says, yes, I know. You know, so nobody knows that anymore. Nobody pays any attention or have any concern about what they do or say based on what God's gonna think of them or what God's gonna do in the future. It seems like everybody before World War II, virtually everybody was concerned about things that were spiritual, and they were concerned about being on the right side of God. And today it's like nobody is concerned about it.
No. And that's a good way to conclude this episode, because men have forgotten God, right? That's Alexander Solzhenitsyn's favorite line, right? He came here after getting out of the gulags, escaping the Soviet Union. And he was given these series of talks called the Templeton talks. And that's one of the topics he said, men have forgotten God. And here's what he said too, and I'm just paraphrasing. But he said never through history has this ever happened before.
No.
So, but again, you know, that's gone back, you know, a couple of generations ago, right? So it happened slowly and then it accelerated. And this is what we're seeing now. I think we're seeing, again, because of COVID, somehow, in some mysterious way, we saw this all over the world, that this evil has been unleashed. And the only good news about all this, Tom, I think, is the weeds and a weed are standing pretty clearly now. You know, you can pick out a little easier today than I think probably ever before, you know, where you stand on the side of evil. You know, it's becoming more and more clear. You know, less people are lukewarm and more people are either just falling by the wayside in apathy, you know, and basically they lose their courage, they lose their moral fortitude. And this is what happens. You have a country, you know, who was it? It wasn't Adams, I don't think. Who was it that said, here, I leave you a republic if you can hold it?
Right.
If you can hold it. Was that Madison maybe, right? Or no, maybe Washington, you know, I give you a
republic. No, I think it was Adams.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was Ben Franklin.
I think it was
Ben Franklin that said that. So it says, what did you create? It says a republic if you can keep it.
If you can keep it, that's
and
exactly
it's, and, right. And, yes. and it's only suited to a moral
and religious people. Now Adams said that. Yes, yeah, Adams added that. Now Reagan would say that not so long ago, right? Reagan said we're only one generation away from losing our democracy, our republic. You know, and so he understood that very well.
You can't have a republic. You can't have the kind of government we have unless the people are a moral people. And we are becoming a completely immoral society. And there is so little concern about the decline of our morality. It's Bork wrote that book, Slouching Toward Gomorrah.
I didn't read it yet. Yeah. Have you read it?
Yeah.
Is it good?
Oh yeah, it's good. Yeah, he's true.
I mean, we are just absolutely
declining toward a completely depraved culture.
Well, that's a good note to leave people on, right? You know, stand up.
People have a chance to turn it around. I mean, yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah, and it's a win-win situation if you do, because right. Just like the young John Quincy Adams. When you say yes to God, you're really saving your eternal soul, my friends. And this world, right. like John and St. Paul would say both, this world is passing by very quickly. And before you know it, you know, and he said the world's passing by and the lust of it. And so this has been going on for a long time. It's just never been in generations this decadent, you know, to this point, you know. So, hey, buckle up.
Okay.
Buckle up, my friend. Hey, Thomas, good to be with you. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for joining. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.